And we're back for another Inside the U podcast. Here with David Lake, here hosting, here with Andrew Ivins. Chris Stock is feeling a little under the weather, so we're just going to handle the podcast, just the two of us. Andrew, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm just enjoying the summer heat, I guess, here in August.
Back in Florida.
Yeah.
So, I guess, we'll just start real quick with the team news since last time we had the podcast. I guess just a couple, nothing too newsy from the last week of camp. I guess just some things to know. We touched on it in the last podcast, but Michael Pinckney still seems to be having some issues with his hamstring. Coach Mark Richt doesn't seem to think it's a serious hamstring issue, more of like a tweak, and that Pinckney just kind of needs to learn how to play through it, I guess. He participated in the scrimmage last Wednesday and, got through that just fine. But when you see him out at practice, when the media goes out to view practice, he's out there riding the bike, not going through the little individual drills with the linebacker unit. And so, certainly from a depth perspective, it is troubling to see that because Miami doesn't really have linebacker depth. And they're counting on Michael Pinckney to be their starting weak side linebacker this year. With Pinckney out, it's Jamie Gordonier who has stepped in his place, playing first team weak side linebacker spot. The coaches seem to be happy with what he's doing out there so far, but I think really just as soon as Pinckney is good to go and feels good with his hamstring, he's just going to be the guy. He's going to be the starter this year. So
I would say, David, I mean, this is the time really not to kind of, I mean, I don't know if you feel this way, really force him into action. There's no need really to run him in the heat. And when you got these other guys, and especially when you're just trying to get some of those guys reps as well, I think, maybe if this was a week before the Florida A&M game, there'd be more concern. But right now, I think, get him treated. And I know he sent out that one tweet, which kind of sent everyone panicking. So
right.
I think he needs to learn how to stay off the social media a little bit.
Yeah, I think, he did visit the hospital the day before the scrimmage. And Coach Richt mainly said it was just kind of a precautionary type thing. It was more of a thing to kind of educate Mike Pinckney on what his injury is, how to go about dealing with it, handling it, recovering from it. So he got some scans too while he was there, and everything checked out good. And Coach Richt just said, basically he's coming from high school. He's never really had any type of serious injury or really any injury period in his career up till now. And so he just doesn't know how to handle it, doesn't know what it is, I guess. And so they've just been trying to educate him on exactly what's going on with his body at this point. So I guess just moving to the next thing with team news, I guess just the scrimmage. Miami had their first scrimmage of fall camp last Wednesday. Media could not view the scrimmage, but certainly Coach Richt talked about it, shared stats from the scrimmage, who played well. And really, I guess just the first thing that popped out from the scrimmage was the play of the defensive line. They were credited with 9 sacks. And, I guess first, second, and third team each totaled 3 sacks during the scrimmage. Chad Thomas, I think, had 2 sacks. Al-Qaeddine Muhammad had 2 sacks of his own. And so that's good to see from the starting unit. Trent Harris, who's with the second team at defensive end, also had 2 sacks. So I guess just one thing to note, too, from the scrimmage is that it is ones versus twos. And so that means, first team defensive line is going up against the second team offensive line. And, certainly the first team defensive line should dominate that matchup. And then vice versa, the first team offense is going up against the second team defense. So, you can take the stats with a grain of salt. When Coach Richt was asked why he wants to do it that way, he mainly said, it's because it's because he can ask the second team to give the first team a certain look at the drop of a hat. So if they're scrimmaging and maybe he kind of wants the second team defense to show a cover 2 look, they can go do that. they can execute that better than a scout team could, I guess. And so that was kind of his rationale. I also think, too, maybe that it limits injuries somewhat. He didn't say that, but I just think you're going to have less injuries when you have first-teamers going up against second-teamers. So, yeah, I mean, and then also looking at the offensive side of the scrimmage, Brad Kaya seemed very efficient, you know, if you're going by his stats. He was about 16 of 19 for about 250 yards. I think he had a long pass to Braxton Berrios. Braxton Berrios was definitely the most productive receiver on the day. He had a touchdown. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, the running back production was all pretty much even across the board with Mark Walton, Joseph Yearby, and Gus Edwards. So, I mean, really, Richt was happy with both sides from the scrimmage, which is what you want out of a scrimmage, I guess, big picture-wise. And so no major injuries from the scrimmage. So overall, it was a good day. I guess, Andrew, just transitioning now, just bringing you more into the podcast, I guess Media Day also was last Monday, and you were there. You know, I know we had you kind of talking to the coaches. All the coaches on the staff were made available for interviews, and you kind of took that opportunity to kind of talk about their philosophies with recruiting. I guess, which coaches did you talk to, and what did you maybe take away from that experience?
Well, I think it was, just to start off, it was a great event. I mean, just to get the coaches from each side of the ball and the coordinators in that type of setting is pretty rare, and I know it varies from program to program, but it was kind of just, hey, I mean, you got one-on-one time with each of those guys, and there were certain coaches I was hoping to get to, and there was other ones that I did, and I think the biggest takeaway for me was probably talking with the safety coach, Coach Banda.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really have I don't know who on the staff would be the quote-unquote recruiting coordinator, but he seems to be a guy who's has his hand in pretty much a lot of the recruiting. And,
yeah,
you know, I was asking him a lot about just how do you keep the momentum going? Because I know me and you have talked about it in the past, and a lot of people on the message boards talk about it. Miami's got a lot of recruiting right now, but what happens once the season starts? And he kind of told me that the strategy is to get these kids on campus as much as they can. When you look at those 2018 and 2019 classes, they're trying to get as many guys as they can. I mean, just the past couple of practices, they've had guys out there. So that was kind of, I would say, one big takeaway for me. The other one I got from him, and we've seen it this cycle, has been the position flexibility. I don't think Miami has a really tailored to, hey, we need this at cornerback, hey, we need this at right. safety. It's kind of, hey, we like this kid's talent, let's see what goes and they're going to do with it. So I thought that was the interesting takeaways from him. I mean, it was just interesting to hear him say that their advantage is bringing kids on campus, and we'll see how that kind of plays out. But I think it's the right move, if you ask me.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, looking forward, is there any maybe recruiting event that they're going to try and get guys on campus? I mean, I know there's always the Florida State game, and maybe that's not necessarily on campus. But it does sound like maybe, Andrew, that guys are going to take unofficial visits down to Miami for that game.
Yeah, the Florida we were talking about that before the podcast, the Florida State game, that visitors list is already kind of taking shape, and it even goes back to the last podcast we did when I was at the Miami Dolphins High School Media Day. I think I saw somewhere Anthony McFarland, the top 24/7 running back out of the DeMath area. He says he's going to be there for an unofficial visit. And then you got Jeremiah Holloman, the top 100 wide receiver out of Georgia. He's kind of becoming more and more of a name. He said he's going to be there. Caleb Chandler. It's looked like that's going to be the kind of marquee recruiting event. I know the Florida Atlantic and the Florida A&M games are before that. And I think Miami's actually probably going to push to get a lot of those kids there just because you're going to have that new atmosphere and a new stadium. I mean, it's not the old Sun Life. So it'll be interesting to see. I think the Florida State sideline games, I would argue it might be the most impressive list. I would say maybe dating back to that Florida game a couple of years ago. I mean,
sure.
I think there was, what, like 100 kids there? So it'll be interesting.
I know another assistant you talked to was offensive line coach Stacy Searles. And, you know, I know just reading from your article, Andrew, that he certainly wasn't shy about saying how much he really wants offensive tackles moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was the big takeaway. And he seemed to have a lot of frustration. I don't think it was frustration just about the kind of line of questioning, just frustrated about kind of what they have in camp now. And I think what the previous staff had kind of left in terms of how many tackles and guards they are. But right now, Miami's got three guys committed, and I don't think they're anywhere close to being done. And I know since I came on board here at Inside the U, you've always been telling me that. But just to hear it come from him was something else. And to hear him kind of, you know, because my question was, I mean, he was a guy who coached in Virginia. He has background in North Carolina. And I wanted to know, can you get offensive linemen out of South Florida? Obviously, this cycle, there's some good ones with Navon Donaldson, Kadeem Telfort, and then the duo at American Heritage and Terrell Slayton and Kylion Herbert. And he basically said there was no reason for them to have to go to Iowa. I mean, yes, obviously they did this cycle, but he feels like there's a big enough talent pool here. And it just seemed to be a lot of frustration that some of these guys hadn't given Miami a look. But I think Miami is nowhere close to being done with that. They're going to continue to go after guys. And I wouldn't be surprised if they find some of these guys who maybe develop who maybe reshape their bodies and we don't really know about now. And are those guys not the same players? I mean, is that a miss? Is that a plan B guy? I mean, I don't really think so because everyone develops at a different time. And we see it every year in the NFL draft. These guys come out of these small schools. It's like, well, how do they end up here and how are they in the NFL now? It's just people develop on different timelines. You know, not everyone's going to be 6'5", 280 their sophomore year of school.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about how much they really want offensive tackles and need offensive tackles, but I mean, looking at the recruiting board, I guess, Andrew, there's no, like, at this time, there's no real, like, easy answer as to, okay, Miami will probably get this offensive tackle in the end. I mean, that's not already committed. I mean, is there anyone, you know, off the top of your head that you're kind of looking at now that, okay, Miami, maybe if they keep pushing, they got a chance in the end to add this guy to the class?
I think when you look at the offensive line class right now, you have Zach Dykstra out of Iowa. You have Navon Donaldson, who everyone knows. And then you got Zach Hillary, who Miami's really excited about. Obviously, he's very raw. I think those guys are all three pretty solid. Donaldson, you know, he's doing his visits and stuff like that. But I think they're definitely going to add at least one more, and I think it's going to be somewhere in the group of Kadeem Telfort, the guy out of Booker T. Washington, Caleb Chandler, who's also going to be there for the Florida State game. He's a one-time Iowa State commit out of Georgia. And then Marcus Miner, Anthony McFarland's teammate. I think they're going to get at least one of those guys. And like you said, it's kind of hard to be like, hey, this is the guy. I would say they probably get one of those and then make a run at Alex Leatherwood, the five-star out of Pensacola. And then if you miss on him, maybe you find that developmental kid who was injured his junior season or kind of really reshaped his body. And I think you would probably agree with me. I mean, there's some huge staff turnover. I mean, I don't know where these top flight, quote unquote, you know, 250 kids are just going to develop from that. But just because they're not a 250 kid now doesn't mean they won't be one in January and February.
No doubt. I guess just another guy you talked to, another assistant, wide receivers coach, Ron Dugans. And you kind of talked to him about just how different it is maybe coaching at a rival school, because I know he played at Florida State and he also coached at Louisville and certainly recruited against Miami while at Louisville. You know, just how interesting was that whole conversation, Andrew?
It was. I thought it was one of the most interesting ones because it really had come, I would say, within 48 hours of, a few days of Rodney Scott decommitting. And I know a lot of people have written out there that Miami kind of wanted to drop Rodney Scott, the receiver out of Southridge, and that wasn't really the impression I got. And I think that's where a lot of his frustration came through in the quotes, with him just talking about how, you know, it's different. Kids want to leave the area and stuff like that. And I think he really is kind of just adjusting to going from negatively recruiting as much as you can about kids staying at home to now telling them it's the best thing. And I mean, that's recruiting at the end of the day. You got to sell what you can. I think missing out to Jerry Jeudy, there was definitely some frustration as well. But he seemed to be a guy who, hey, I got a plan B. We're going to find guys. It's not the end of the world. And he's someone who I think is a veteran of recruiting battles and will definitely make a run at these guys that are still committed. Just because Jerry Jeudy's committed now doesn't mean it's all over. And I think you would probably agree with that as well.
Yeah. They're going to keep recruiting the best guys at receiver. And, you know, really just you got to do that because you never know what a good season could do for you in recruiting. So, you know, you got to keep that relationship going. And if Miami ends up having a better season than people expect, then maybe Jerry Jeudy wants in. And, you know, that'll happen not just at the receiver spot, but every position in general. You know, I know why we were there too, Andrew, yesterday or last Monday at Media Day. There was two commitments that happened while we were there. So it was a real hectic day for us. Trajan Bandy committed to Miami. That one wasn't as much of a surprise. But before Trajan Bandy popped, it was Jonathan Garvin, the defensive end out of Lake Worth. So I guess just let's start with Garvin, Andrew. You know, how surprised were you that one happened at that time? And I know you went out to one of his practices last week, too, and got to see him in person.
Well, we knew that Miami wasn't going to sign just one defensive end. And once they landed DJ Johnson out of Sacramento, California, they were going to kind of try to pair someone with him in the class. I think when I put out my mock class at the beginning of the month, I chose Brian Jones, the Ole Miss commit. That's just really because Jonathan Garvin, I mean, he's such just a ghost on the recruiting scene. It's really hard to get a gauge for him. And when he committed, he kind of said he just talked to his parents and they decided, hey, we're going to end this process. I mean, Tennessee and NC State seem to be right there. But he's a guy that, he's not a 250 kid like I keep saying, but he's someone that there was interest from a ton of different schools, tons of upside. I got to see him in practice. He's a legit 6'3", 6'4", and he's a kid that's just growing. I think he's the perfect project-type guy to put next to DJ Johnson on that line. And this is someone that Coach Kuhl's really been making money off of when he was at Missouri, just taking and finding guys and then just developing them. But, I think everyone on the recruiting beat would say that one came out of left field. But it wasn't really surprising when you talk to the people in Coral Gables. They seemed to be kind of working that one for a while. It just really just kind of came out of nowhere. And to be right before that whole Trajan Bandy thing, I think was a little crazy. But that is covering recruiting. You never know when it's going to happen. It's always at the most hectic time, like right when Mark Richt's stepping to the podium for his Media Day press conference.
I know from my conversation with Coach Kuligowski at Media Day, that he kind of, I asked him just, you know, what do you look for in a defensive end recruit? And he said, you know, really just the main thing he cares about is how well do they move. And, you know, you got to project how big they can get and how much stronger they can get. So, you know, just from seeing him in practice, Andrew, how well does Jonathan Garvin move, would you say?
Well, he plays high. And I think I wrote that in the film review. But he's a quick guy. He's very, very quick. He's just like I said, I mean, his pad level isn't there, and there really hasn't been a lot of coaching. But it's that athletic ability that I think really separates him and makes him kind of a dude. So I like that. He's got quick feet. Just needs to get coached up, and I don't think he's a guy who's going to come in and play from day one. So.
Right. How much do you feel like he weighs right now?
I would say he's probably a lean 215, but that's a guy who's going to get up to 240 once he just keeps eating. And it's really hard at this time of the year to size up a kid, especially after a couple weeks of practice in August. So,
Where do you feel like kind of things stand now at the DN, you know, the DN board? Do you feel like Miami might be done now, or do you feel like they might still try and go after one more guy?
It's tough, and I think it's really going to come down to how the numbers shake out. I think Miami's probably pretty happy with what they have on the defensive line right now.
Yeah.
I think they're only going to add a guy, and based upon what I kind of heard last week, they're only going to add a guy if it's the right guy. Right. And it's someone they think that's going to be a stud. But you still got to keep recruiting those ends because you never know what's going to happen. It's recruiting in 2016. Jonathan Ford could take a visit somewhere else and fall in love. So I think you got to keep that in mind. But I think right now, given the number situation as a whole and needs at other positions like offensive tackle, I don't think Miami's really just going to be going after guys to go after them.
And then the other commitment that went off that day that we kind of, it was expected when he announced that he was going to commit last Monday was Trajan Bandy, the cornerback from Columbus High School. It's a big need, big position of need this year for Miami cornerback. And Trajan's one of the best ones in Dade County this year, Andrew. I guess, what stands out about Trajan to you, and how big is this commitment for Miami?
I think it's a statement commitment. I don't think if I, and I think you would agree with me here, and a lot of Miami fans, if Al Golden or the previous staff was here, I don't think Trajan Bandy would be here.
He probably wouldn't have even gotten an offer.
Right. And yeah, I mean, Miami was a little slow, but you could afford to be slow when these kids really like Miami.
Sure.
And they wanted to evaluate him. They saw him this spring game and they like what they saw. I think we talked about this maybe a few podcasts ago. I know Chris Stock and me did. He's not the biggest kid, but he at 5'9", whatever, 180, 170 he is, he's a stocky player.
Right.
And he's just someone that makes plays. And he's a kid that a lot of people like in the recruiting world in terms of other prospects. So I think getting him was huge. The writing was already on the wall. But at the end of the day, he did visit South Carolina. T. Rob was their defensive coordinator, was going to do probably whatever it took to get him. So just to get him into the fold and for everything to go as planned, it says a lot. And I think he's a guy. I personally think he's a guy who can make an impact from day one. Maybe it's in the nickel or on special teams. He just seems to have that bulldog mentality. I mean, everyone's wrote about it. Street fighter, this blah blah blah. Plays like Sean Taylor. I just think he's a dude. And the rankings might not reflect it, but a guy that Miami definitely needed.
Yeah, he's the type of guy that Miami has to get. You got to get those local guys with the bulldog mentality, like you said. And Trajan definitely has that. And I agree. I think he should be the starting nickel corner day one at least. I think he does have the ability to play outside, but I guess he doesn't have that ideal size that the coaching staff might look for on the outside at corner. But no doubt he's going to also change the cornerback room in general, just with the way he works and his mentality that he approaches every day. I guess Miami has three corners locked up for this class in Trajan, his teammate C.J. Henderson, and then Brian Edwards, who I guess is now at Miramar, is going to start at cornerback, and if that doesn't work out, they can move him to safety. I guess, do you feel like maybe they're done at corner right now, Andrew, or do you think they have room for one more if they want?
I think it's the same thing as the defensive line. Unless you find that guy you guys think is going to be a stud, I think Miami's pretty much set in stone here. Christopher C.J. Henderson, he seemed like a guy who was probably going to, or I mean, there was a lot of smoke that he was going to flip, but I think the guns have kind of cooled there from Florida. Obviously, it's going to get revamped right in that first week of December when coaches are out on the road and you can go in home and stuff like that. So I think right now Miami has to be happy. Sean Davis is obviously going to announce here and by the time the next podcast comes out, but we all know that he's pretty much all Florida.
Right.
So they're going to have to add a safety. Amari Carter seems to be the guy. I was there at Palm Beach Gardens a couple weeks ago. So I think the only other defensive back right now and the target A1 right now is Amari Carter. I put my crystal ball pick in for Amari to Miami. I think he's coming to Miami. It's obviously a Notre Dame Miami battle. So if they get him, he's going to enroll early. I think they're locked up. But if Amari, maybe he starts looking somewhere else, I think Derek Smith can enter the mix, the kid out of Jacksonville. So we'll see. But that's kind of just what I think now. I think the numbers are tighter than people are kind of thinking. So
yeah,
and you want to leave some space in case maybe you do win 10 games.
Sure.
So
with just with Amari, let's talk about him now. I guess without giving away too much, I guess your intel, Andrew, I guess, was there anything in particular that made you put in that crystal ball? Because I know you came from the Notre Dame beat and you had their side of things and you knew that Notre Dame was a real player and in his recruitment. But yeah, like you said, you put in the crystal ball to Miami this past weekend. I guess, was there anything in particular that made you feel good about Miami's chances?
Well, I'd been waiting for a while to actually put it in, and I kind of told Amari that. I said, hey, I wanted to come see you in person and talk to you in person before I did it, just because I've known him for so long throughout the recruiting process, and he's given me pretty much access to everything that I've ever asked him for.
Yeah.
I think just Miami has really, really done a good job of just making him feel like a priority. Obviously, Notre Dame, they got his two teammates, Devin Studstill and Tavon Coney. And I think that the new staff in Miami was involved in both of those recruitments. You know, maybe Miami gets those kids too. I really do think that. I was talking to Tom Loy, the guy at Irish 247, the Notre Dame 247 site, and he was telling me, hey, Amari Carter seems to be a different kid than Devin Studstill and Tavon Coney. And I'm like, yeah, you know, having covered Notre Dame, I think he's more of a Notre Dame kid. But I think on the flip side of that, I think that's the kind of kid that Miami wants.
Sure.
Right now, they want these academic type kids that aren't going to get in trouble. And Amari fits that mold. And I think it says a lot that right now his mom has been on campus there multiple times, and she hasn't been to Notre Dame yet. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's on the sideline for the FAMU and the FAU game, and then shows up for the Florida State game, and then they get him on campus in December for an official visit. And, it's a done deal. I mean, I know a lot of people thinking he's going to make a decision here before the start of the season, and that he's a silent. And that's not the impression I get. So, okay. I guess if he does come out and here in the next couple of weeks, I got burned. But I just don't think that, and I think I have a pulse on his recruitment. But that's my two cents on it.
Is he an early enrollee guy?
Yeah, he's going to early enroll. His brother. His family's all very academically oriented. His brother was on academic scholarship at SMU. He teaches English in Japan or China or one of those things. So just to give you a little background on the family, I mean, this is just a different type of kid.
Sure.
He's just a different type of one. He told me he doesn't watch much football. It was just weird. So, and I think just Miami's relationship that they've built with Coach Banda and Coach Diaz and Coach Rump, It's saying a little bit more than Notre Dame is right now. And Notre Dame is recruiting with Autry Denson, their running backs coach. And I think Amari realizes that he likes knowing who his position coach is going to be, at least for the next 2 years or whatever it is, because we all know college staffs change.
What impresses you about Amari as a player? What does he do well in your mind as a player?
Oh, I used to think Devin Studstill, the safety that came out of there last year, was an absolute stud. And then I watched him basically work his way into the starting rotation as an early enrollee in spring ball. And I think Amari's just better than him. He's absolutely ripped, very low body fat. But he's another guy who, not like Trajan Bandy, but he can play in that nickel, and he's just a playmaker. Isn't afraid to throw his body around. Very sound tackler. I've always been a fan of Palm Beach Gardens in terms of the coaching there and the drills they do. You don't see it at other schools in the Tri-County area. I mean, they're doing tackling drills, for 2 hours after practice. He's very fundamental, instinctive. Not the biggest kid, but uses his body very well. So I think that he's a guy who can have an early impact, maybe as a redshirt freshman or a sophomore, depending on where they need him. And if he comes to Miami, they're going to need him pretty much right away. So.
Yeah, I mean, next year there's definitely going to be two open spots at safety. Both of them are going to be open for position battle. And so, I'm sure that's attractive for a guy like Amari. Another recruit I want to ask you about, Andrew, five-star Louisiana wide receiver Devontae Smith, who visited Miami for Paradise Camp. He was there. He worked out. He was definitely very impressive. He was set to make his commitment on Monday night. But that got pushed back due to all the flooding there. Is that right in Louisiana, Andrew?
Yeah, that's kind of what it is, and that's what his high school coach says. And I got a couple friends in Louisiana right now, and they
say the area is pretty bad. So I think someone was tweeting out of him, good job respecting the community and whatnot. But it just didn't seem logistically safe for him to do it.
Yeah.
And then there's all the internet rumors that he really hasn't made up his decision. And I would agree. I mean, the crystal ball on 247
Sports or whatnot reads 100% Alabama, but I think Miami's more in it than maybe people would initially think.
Does that mean that he's going to pick UM whenever he does? I don't think so. I think Alabama's pretty much in it. But Coach Dugans has done a very, very good job of recruiting him. He's ideally exactly what they want in this offense. I know you saw Devontae at the Paradise Camp. He's a rail thin kid, but he's 6'1" and he moves just so well.
Yeah,
so smooth. And so we'll see. I keep saying this, and I think it was the same thing I said about Jerry Jeudy. I mean, if these guys commit now, I'm not surprised if they're visiting later on in the process. I mean, you got to look. He drove down here with his family just for the Paradise Camp. So if Miami has the space and they're still looking for guys at some point after they miss on him, I think they will circle back and try to make a run at him.
And so then I guess just moving forward, you know, let's say hypothetically Miami does miss out on Devontae Smith as is expected. I guess it kind of seems like the way it's shaken out, Andrew, because, I mean, Miami does want to add one more, you know, quote-unquote top-level receiver to this class. And it's kind of shaping up that Jeremiah Holloman, four-star receiver out of Georgia, who's not really committed anywhere yet, but certainly all the SEC powerhouses are kind of in the mix there with Jeremiah. I guess just what do you feel like's going on with his recruitment? Because, I mean, it wasn't that long ago when Miami got kind of serious with them. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. And if you look at his recruitment, and I know we could say this about every recruitment, it's just really been something that you just don't see. I think he tweeted out yesterday. He's like, this time last year, I had zero scholarship offers. Now I have all these options. And he's right. He committed to Michigan very early in the process. And I don't really think Michigan knew how good he was when he committed. Yeah. That was kind of when they were doing that swarm tour satellite camp thing where they're like, oh, hey, you know, we'll take you. You're a 6'5 receiver. We'll just drop you whenever. And now he's just this dude that everyone wants. And I know he's from Georgia, and obviously Mark Richt and some of those coaches were in Georgia, but there wasn't that much contact. But I think what really does help Miami is Holloman obviously is from Georgia, and he knows the Mark Richt brand name. DJ Dallas is a 7-on-7 teammate of him, and he's kind of been in his ear. And he says he's going to visit. If I'm Miami, I'm hoping he comes down on an unofficial for that Florida State game, and then you get him back on campus later. But it seems like Miami is legitimately in that top shelf of group of schools, probably along with Tennessee, Georgia, and Auburn. So it's going to be a difficult pull. But if you want to play SEC football in the ACC, like Mark Richt and them keep kind of hinting at, this is the kid you kind of got to get. So it'll be interesting to see. But if Smith picks Alabama, I would not be surprised if bye week, which is the third week of September, Miami has maybe two coaches up in Georgia to see to Holloman play.
Right. I guess, you know, you mentioned it, but him and DJ Dallas, they were on the same 7-on-7 team. Do you have a feel for just how close they are? I mean, DJ's a pretty magnetic guy himself, so he's certainly going to recruit anyone or everyone he feels like can help Miami. But do you get a sense that they really do have a close relationship?
I do. When I talk to DJ, I mean, you know, sometimes you have to filter through what's just being said and whatnot, but you do. And if you, I mean, this sounds just so dumb, but if you just have watched kind of in the past couple of weeks, just how much or how Holloman has changed his tune on social media, he seems to be pretty more pro Miami. And is he doing that for more followers? I mean, who knows, but that's really one of the only ways you can really gauge just kind of where a kid's kind of standing. And it seems like, I mean, Miami has kind of really gone all in on him, and he even told me that. So I think that relationship is there, and if DJ Dallas is driving down for the Florida State game, which I'm assuming he is, he's run his mouth enough on social media about about how Miami's going to win, I would not be surprised if he tries to get him in the car, and we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, so I think that about wraps everything up here, Andrew. I appreciate you stepping in for Chris. You know, I don't know about you, but I feel like this is the best Inside the U podcast we've done yet. Hopefully Chris feels better. He'll be back next week, and we'll definitely rock it out again next week. So thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, man. I hope you guys are staying cool at practice out on Green Tree.
We're trying. Thanks, man. Take care.
All right, we'll talk to you later.